This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. A major gathering of world leaders in Hamburg, Germany, under the auspices of the G20 summit is taking place. On Friday, U.S. President Donald Trump met at last with Russian President Vladimir Putin and had a more than two-hour meeting with him. Mr. Trump reportedly told Putin, quote, "It's an honor to be with you." Also on Friday, talks began in earnest over the thorny issues of climate and trade, with German Chancellor Angela Merkel urging, quote, "compromise between leaders." Meanwhile, outside on the streets of Hamburg, there have been days of protests with clashes between protesters and police, resulting in tear gas, water cannons, and arrests. My guest is Lorenzo Marsili. He's the co-founder and director of European Alternatives and the initiator and current spokesperson of the European Initiative for Media Pluralism. He recently co-wrote an article entitled "The G20 Parade of Monsters." Welcome to the program, Lorenzo.
Hello to everybody. Thanks for having me.
So first, let's talk about what has been happening on the streets of Hamburg. We had had a report earlier in the week, but now we've seen images and videos emerge of pretty violent clashes between protesters and police, a lot of tear gas, even water cannons deployed against protesters. Can you describe briefly what's been happening in Hamburg on the streets?
Yes, water cannons, and it gets much more technological than that. We've got drones being used for surveillance of the G20 summit and for security of the summit against the protesters. There is really a very complex security apparatus which seems completely out of scale with the primarily peaceful protests of citizens on the streets. What we've seen yesterday was very excessive use of violence on the part of the police, to the extent that today even very mainstream German press have initiated a national debate on whether there needs to be a reform to the policing tactics of the German police. That violence has continued today, and again what we see is a very aggressive stance of the security forces that makes you wonder whether they are trying to foster a climate of fear around the summit of the G20 leaders to distract the attention from the lack of results that will be coming from within the institutions.
And you and I are talking on Friday. By the time some of our audience hear and watch this interview, it'll be Monday. And there is expected to be another major action happening on Friday, and I believe even on Saturday. Lorenzo, let's talk about the G20 Parade of Monsters, as you call them. Leaders gathered from many major nations. I mean, we're talking about, you know, India's prime minister, China's leader, the Canadian, the U.S., and many European leaders. It's really a who's who of heads of major nations from around the world. And they're meant to be talking primarily about climate and trade, although the G20 was founded to address financial crises. But they don't talk about it in terms of the failures of capitalism. Why should we be looking at this gathering through the lens of the failures of neoliberal capitalism?
Well, the G20, as you rightly say, was set up to address repeated crises of Western and global capitalism. It actually initiated in 1997 following the Asian financial crisis, and then it gained in importance following the 2007-2008 global financial crisis. But until very recently, the G7, G8 process, and then the G20 process that followed it, what was really about guaranteeing the most effective form of governance for one model that seemed fit to all, which was the neoliberal model of global capitalism that was slowly but surely extending itself to the vast majority of the planet. You all know the famous Fukuyama quote of the end of history. That game has really ended a few years ago with the global financial crisis and its aftermath. And what you see today in Hamburg is a G20, and indeed a global leadership, that is really split between two fault lines. On the one side, you have those leaders that believe that we can go back to the system prior to the crisis, the system of unrestrained globalization, open markets, unrestrained free trade. You have people like Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron in that field. And on the other side, you have a rising protectionist, nationalist tendency that goes from the Turkey of Erdogan to the United States of Donald Trump. So for the first time in recent history, what we see is that the leaders of the most influential countries of the world are directly divided on the kind of economic and political model that they see fit for the future. And this is really a novelty. We're really living in a kind of post-American hegemony world in a certain sense.
And so do you think that the coming to power of Donald Trump kind of pushed it over the edge, that the United States, the world leader, economic leader, is now, you know, headed by a person that nobody expected to be there and is really quite out of place among people like Angela Merkel, but maybe more at home alongside Marine Le Pen of France? Is that really a huge shakeup of the G20?
Well, it is. American hegemony and power has been in relative decline since many years, and clearly well before Donald Trump arrived to the White House. But nonetheless, there was the sense that the Western powers were hanging together, that the European Union, Canada, Australia, the United States, with the leadership of the United States, still represented a cohesive, united power bloc that maintained a control over the most important economic and political decisions globally. Clearly a control that was challenged by a rising China, an assertive Russia, but nonetheless, there was a Western pole that was clearly dominant. The arrival of Donald Trump to the White House has started to break the Western pole and the Western alliance. It's very evident here in Europe that most national leadership, with the possible exception of the Polish prime minister, openly speak of the need for Europe to regain a certain independence and to protect its own future economically and militarily, independently from the United States. You can see there is a divergence when it comes to trade agreements, with Trump pulling out of the Pacific trade agreement with Japan, but then Japan signing a free trade agreement with the European Union only a few days ago. And these fault lines, these fractures within the Western alliance have increased the element of a global disorder where no one really seems to be any longer in charge.
Can this then be an opening for those, well, we used to call them anti-globalization forces, but I'm not sure I like that term. You know, there may be two poles within the halls of the G20 summit, the authoritarian protectionist anti-trade, anti-world trade, and then the neoliberal pro-world trade. But then on the streets, there's a third pole, the third prong of power, which is grassroots power, presumably, led by this notion of rejecting both authoritarianism and neoliberal capitalism.
No, that's right. We shouldn't in any way be nostalgic about the world of yesterday. The world of the so-called Pax Americana was anything but peaceful. We've seen a constant stream of warfare over the last 10, 20 years, primarily to maintain the hegemony of the U.S.-dominated Western pole, Western alliance. We've seen the development of financial capitalism that has blackmailed the real economy and has caused one of the largest levels of inequalities in the history of capitalism. So the system that we come from, politically, militarily, economically, is really nothing to be very much nostalgic about. And its closure is something that indeed could usher in a possible positive way forwards. Clearly, the answer to the closing of the old, closing of the world of yesterday is not to be found in the nationalist, protectionist, authoritarian tendencies of Putin of Russia, Erdogan, Xi Jinping of China, and to a certain extent, Donald Trump of the United States of America. The answer has to be found in a renewed vision of equality, of radical democracy, of participation, that is able to reconstruct an economic system that is rigged, and that is able to reconstruct a democracy that is captured by financial and elite interests, which and then in turn caused the populist backlash that we've seen happening all across the West. So yes, the hope is precisely this, to open up a third space beyond the establishment and beyond the nationalist populists.
And of course, the tragedy is that that third space is not represented within the halls of the G20 summit. We do not see Jeremy Corbyn. We do not see Alexis Tsipras. We do not see, although I don't know if Greece is part of the G20, we do not see those left-leaning leaders that came so close, Bernie Sanders, that came so close to the leadership of their respective countries, only to, you know, sort of lose at the last minute.
Well, and that's why the answer and the solution for the world of the future is not to be found from within the halls of power of the G20. The leaders in Hamburg today are either nostalgic for a past that will not come back, or represent an authoritarian future that is to be rejected. The alternative is not in the hall, but as you were saying a moment ago, is precisely in the streets. And it's in the social movements, it's in the new upstart political parties such as Podemos in Spain, it's in a renewed social democracy such as that of Bernie Sanders in the United States or Jeremy Corbyn in the United Kingdom. These forces are not yet in power of any significant country globally, but they are rising, and their capacity to yield power and to clearly reach the levers of power will be one of the greatest decisive factors in crafting a course away from two equally unacceptable options, the status quo, the establishment, or the nationalist backlash.
Now, Lorenzo, in his speech in Poland on Thursday, Donald Trump referred 10 times to the West and our civilization. And of course, this kind of language is resonant to his white nationalist base back in the United States, but it's also resonating with a lot of the anti-immigrant forces in Europe. And then countering the G20, we do have the leaders of non-Western nations like Brazil and India. How do you see them offering a third way, or are they just non-Western countries eager to join the Western club?
Well,
with the BRICS formation in particular, I should mention. Yeah.
Yes, it's interesting. If you look at the BRICS, and for instance, if you look at Brazil, what you see is a progressive government that has done much to reshape capitalism in a developing country, the government of Lula da Silva and Dilma after him, that has been toppled over by oligarchical financial interests and replaced just over a year ago by an expression of some of the most authoritarian neoliberal power base that you can imagine in Brazil. The new president of Brazil is nothing to be prized or to be celebrated. On the contrary, he represents the utmost development of a kind of authoritarian capitalism that is unfortunately an odd mix of Chinese politics and American economy. When you look towards India, you also see a leader in Modi who picks up a certain nationalist tone, who often implements policies that are exclusionary towards ethnic or religious minorities in the country, and who is not in any way really representative of the kind of radical democracy or increased equality that one would be aspiring to from a non-aligned movement or a so-called BRICS alliance. So I don't think that the solution is really going to be found in specific countries just because they happen not to be Western countries. The solution needs to come from a political overhaul from within those countries, be it the United States with Bernie Sanders, or Brazil with a renewed workers' movement taking up the banner that was taken away from the Lula-Dilma regime just a couple of years ago. But there are no ready-made solutions, unfortunately. And we're really living in a time, in a historical time, where you cannot point to any one country to represent a clear ready-made alternative to be copy-pasted elsewhere. It's really the time where the old has died, the new is not born yet, and our task is to craft it.
And Lorenzo, finally, you know, it's tempting to be able to see the presidential or leader-like leaders of some of the Western nations or some nations in general, and contrast them with the Donald Trumps of the world, and see the Angela Merkel club as the civilized club, the Donald Trump club as the as the way backward. I mean, indeed, that's a lot of the kind of discussions we have here in the United States with the kind of Democrats holding the banner of progressivism, even if in the end they put forward policies that have decimated our communities. Do you feel that that battle of image is failing, that the European leaders, the mask is being pulled away, which is why you're calling all of them monsters, Merkel, Trump, and everybody?
Well, there is a clearly symbiotic relationship between the two sides. Mm. It is the policies of the so-called liberal establishment that have created the populist nationalist backlash represented by Donald Trump or Marine Le Pen. It was not the right wing to be privatizing all industry, to be giving a completely free rein to finance, to be presiding over a system where inequalities have reached a level untouched since the time of the Belle Époque, when you couldn't show your legs in the Moulin Rouge in Paris over 100 years ago. This has been the liberal establishment, and very often a progressive liberal establishment, that has created crafted precisely those policies. And it is those policies, it is the failure of that neoliberal model that has then created the brewing ground for the nationalist insurrection, the backlash of the populists all across the Western Hemisphere. And now what you see is the relation that is completely symbiotic between the two. The establishment can keep sometimes hold of power by injecting the fear that the nationalists will win into the electorate. You know that Hillary Clinton famously said, yes, I'm the last thing to separate you from the apocalypse. That is the same attitude that Macron has won with in France, injecting the fear of a Le Pen presidency. And at the same time, the Le Pens or the Donald Trumps thrive precisely from the failed policies of the establishment, and by presenting themselves as the only available realistic alternative to a continuation of business as usual. So these two forces are actually part, two faces of the same medal. They are in a very close, incestuous relationship, one with the other. And what we need to do is to be able to toss away the coin with both faces of that medal on it.
Lorenzo, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article from our website. Thanks so much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
My guest is Lorenzo Marsili, co-founder and director of European Alternatives and the initiator and current spokesperson for the European Initiative for Media Pluralism. His article is called The G20 Parade of Monsters. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.